Almost 150 products made right here in Wisconsin were nominated for a contest that's set up as a bracket-style competition called Manufacturing Madness. The winner of the Coolest Thing in Made in Wisconsin contest was announced Monday. We're taking a closer look at Wisconsin's manufacturing aptitude this hour. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show. Kurt Bauer is president and CEO of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. The organization is behind Manufacturing Madness, now in its second year. Kurt, welcome to the show.
Morning, Kate.
Good morning. Well, you know, I did a spoiler alert right at the top of the hour and let it slip as to what was the winner by popular vote. But first of all, how did you set up this bracket of products that are Wisconsin made?
Well, you mentioned this is our second year doing it. We started it last year. We actually had about 300 nominees last year. We did just two rounds last year. And then this year we decided the bracket approach might be a little bit more fun, so we borrowed the idea from the NCAA and called it, as opposed to March Madness, Manufacturing Madness, and it was kind of fun to put different products against each other. We did it based on total votes and a seeding, so you ended up with Oshkosh Defense up against Uncle Mike's Bake Shop in De Pere, Wisconsin, and their pecan, the caramel kringle, which is kind of an interesting matchup, heavy manufacturing versus something that's baked. But, of course, the Bake Shop was actually our Cinderella story, very similar to what you see in the NCAA. They did very well. They made it to the third round, and they were eventually beat by Oshkosh Defense. But we had a lot of fun with it and a lot of interest. We had almost 200,000 votes just throughout the tournament. And the whole point is just to draw attention to what's manufactured here in the state of Wisconsin. This is Manufacturing Month in October, and we just want people to understand that this is a manufacturing state. It's by far our largest industry in the state of Wisconsin. And we also wanted to draw attention to the careers that are available in manufacturing because we have a workforce shortage that transcends the economy, but it's particularly pronounced in manufacturing.
Well, let's look at this winner here, Oshkosh Corporation's Joint Light Tactical Vehicle. What is it?
Well, it is the replacement for the Humvee, or commonly referred to as the Hummer. So that is the light truck used to transport troops. And, you know, they're iconic. I mean, I think everybody has seen one of these either driving down the road with the National Guard, or they've seen them on shows or news reports of the Iraq and Afghani war. But the problem with those trucks is that once you put armor on them, their payload capacity goes down. So the military quickly realized they needed something that could carry the payload but also protect the occupants, the soldiers and Marines and airmen and sailors inside. So that's the Joint Light Tactical Vehicle. It is very advanced engineering. There's a lot of technology in it. They actually brought one down to Madison for the State of Wisconsin Business Luncheon where we announced the winner, so I had a chance to take a look at it. Much of it is still classified, so you can't crawl around in it, but it is a beast of a truck.
And how long did they work on this truck?
Well, they've been developing this for a while, and they won a nationwide bidding contest against other defense contractors. And the fact that they won it is impressive because it's going to mean billions of dollars into the Wisconsin economy, not just in Oshkosh where they actually will build these things, but their supply chain transcends the state. So this is a big win for the state of Wisconsin, and there's a lot of pride that I hope people feel that we build something here in Wisconsin that protects our troops out there in the field.
Well, let's talk about the final four. What other products were in contention to win?
Well, they were all signature brands, things that your listeners would probably recognize. We had Generac. Generac makes a variety of different things, but they had submitted their construction commercial generator that's used on construction sites. We had the Aaron Snow Throw from Brilliant, Wisconsin. You very well-known
very
brand.
Very practical, yes.
Very practical indeed, and very cool, and something that we're all unfortunately going to be needing. And then
literally,
Mercury,
figuratively, yes.
Right,
go ahead.
Exactly. And then Mercury Marine, another iconic Wisconsin company, they had submitted their joystick piloting system, which allows you to use a joystick like a video game to basically dock a massive 30-foot multi-million-dollar boat, something that somebody who tries to dock my pontoon boat and usually hits the dock, I can certainly appreciate. So you had heavy machinery. You also had technology. This is exactly what we were hoping for, just to expose people to what is made in Wisconsin, the diversity of products, and not only the diversity of products, but the diversity of the state, because we make things, in Superior, we make things down in Beloit and in all parts in between.
We're talking right now with Kurt Bauer. He is president and CEO of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, and that is the organization behind Manufacturing Madness. Puts on the coolest thing made in Wisconsin contest, and the results of that contest came out Monday with more than 200,000 votes in favor of Oshkosh Corporation's Joint Light Tactical Vehicle that came out on top of that bracket competition. Kurt, Wisconsin prides itself on being a manufacturing state. Why do people embrace that part of the economy?
Well, because it's about 18% of the Wisconsin economy, as I said earlier. It's by far our largest economic sector. About 470,000 Wisconsinites work in manufacturing. It contributes $56 billion in to the Wisconsin economy last year alone. There are about 9,000 manufacturers in the state. We make things in Wisconsin. The old economic axiom, to create wealth in an economy, you need to make it, mine it, or grow it. We do a little bit of all three, but a lot of people just don't know that manufacturing is still as large in Wisconsin as it still is.
Well, I have to mention here that you made a lot of heads turn earlier this week when you threw out there that the state slogan needs an update on the license plate. America's Dairyland isn't the best branding for Wisconsin. So is this something that was more of an off-the-cuff comment, or do you think there's some hard and fast policy to look at here and a change in the works?
It all comes down to workforce for us, and this is why I wanted to start the conversation. And I have talked about this before. I wrote a column on it last year that was published in our magazine. We have a workforce shortage in the state of Wisconsin, and the demographers say it's not going to get better anytime soon. So we have to do the best we can to retain our workforce, keep people here, born and raised Wisconsinites. But we also are frankly going to have to attract people in. If you build a wall around the state of Wisconsin and don't let anybody leave, we still have a workforce shortage. So it comes down to then, how do you attract people in? And we've been having this conversation, and we've been doing some research. And we had our foundation do some research about 2 years ago on perceptions of what people from outside of Wisconsin think about the state. And a lot of those perceptions are inaccurate. And one of them is that because we brand ourselves as such an agricultural state, they believe that if they come to Wisconsin, they're probably going to work in agriculture. Now, they can work in agriculture. It's obviously a very important sector, and it's not just economic, it's cultural for us. But is that the right branding we need to bring people in? It was just a conversation starter. It did seem to touch a nerve. I didn't really mean to do that. My last name means farmer in German, so I feel a little remorse about that.
And seriously, do you think that it is time to set the reset button here as Foxconn enters Wisconsin?
I think Foxconn creates a great opportunity for us to have people look at Wisconsin in a different way, to see that we have this diversity of job opportunities. It's not just manufacturing. It's not just agriculture. We have high tech. We have biotech. We have education. We have healthcare. You name it, Wisconsin has those types of opportunities. We also have an unmatched quality of life. We've got great communities. I often will say that we've got the best small and medium-sized towns that nobody outside of the state has ever heard of. Frankly, we're the best-kept secret in the upper Midwest, and we can leverage the Foxconn opportunity to get that secret out. When Foxconn was announced, it was being broadcast live by many of the cable channels from the East Room of the White House. I mean, what an opportunity to talk about how dynamic the Wisconsin economy is and to take a look at us, not only for other businesses to perhaps relocate here or expand here, but also for people to move here, because we need more people here to satisfy the demand of workers. Because if we can't find workers to replace the retiring baby boomers, those jobs will simply go away, and that will have a stress on a variety of different things.
According to WEDC, Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, the state boasts more than 465,000 manufacturing jobs, and the state's manufacturing job concentration is about 84% above the national average. We're discussing the state of manufacturing products made through the brackets in the Coolest Thing Made in Wisconsin contest. Kurt Bauer stays with us. He's CEO of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. You join the conversation, 800-642-1234. What misconceptions do people have about working in manufacturing? Do you work in manufacturing? Tell us about it, 800-642-1234. Productivity has been flat or growing slowly over the last several years in Wisconsin and across the nation. Boosting productivity in factories is a big issue, as the average growth rate of productivity in the U.S. in recent years has fallen to 1.7%. We're discussing the manufacturing highlights in Wisconsin, products on the horizon, and the challenges the state faces in growing its manufacturing base. Kurt Bauer is here. He's CEO of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What changes do you see in manufacturing? Have you watched processes switch over years, maybe even decades? What do you think is the biggest threat to production in Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. You can also post your thoughts on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go right away to Mark in Romance. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. A couple comments. The thought that this military vehicle is picked as the coolest thing that's been manufactured in Madison or in Wisconsin. Keep in mind, as we've seen with MRAP vehicles from Afghanistan and Iraq conflicts, wars, those things have rolled down American streets, as we saw in St. Louis. They can easily, and I predict, will eventually be used against the citizens of this nation. I would also point out that the Wisconsin manufacturers, folks, the millions of dollars of state money that has been given to various companies to create jobs, and those jobs have not been created. We may be doing a lot of manufacturing, but we could be doing better.
Let's get Kurt now to respond to Mark here. Kurt, go ahead.
Well, I don't really know what to say about the Joint Light Tactical Vehicle is primarily used for military. It's a popularity contest. It was designed to generate excitement and interest around manufacturing. I don't think that it was a deep consideration about anything other than it's a very cool product that's made in the state. I just don't know how else to respond to that. As far as the incentives for manufacturers, I think that they have had a tremendous return on investment, because manufacturing, for every one factory job, you create 2.5 to as many as 4 jobs in other sectors of the economy, like banking, real estate, energy, transportation, healthcare, etc. That's where you're going to get your biggest return on investment. As I said earlier, how you create wealth in an economy is you make it, mine it, and grow it. And manufacturing, obviously, is a big part of that.
And Kurt, have you seen the dollars poured into incentives programs for companies, and certainly Foxconn being at the top there? Have these incentives worked? Have they produced the jobs on the long term?
Some have not. I had this conversation with economists They point to a failure probably being the Mercedes plant down in Alabama, success being the BMW plant in South Carolina or the Boeing facility in South Carolina. Frankly, I think that the 22,000 indirect jobs that they're talking about, I think, is underestimating things. I work in manufacturing. I understand that supply chain. Again, that 1 to 2.5 to 4 ratio of jobs. I frankly think that Foxconn is going to be a huge winner for the state of Wisconsin on a variety of different levels, not just on the job side of things, but also on the perception of the state. High-tech manufacturing is a great way to project yourself to the rest of the world.
Let's go to Jeremy now in Racine. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. As far as changing the license plate, I think we should leave it the way it is. Kind of like a tradition that they state. And when I was in the service, most people I spoke to outside the Wisconsin area didn't even know where Wisconsin was. It's pretty much been a flyover state for years. But one of the big things that we've always been known for, though, is we used to be the machine capital of the world in Milwaukee area. And one of the reasons why we keep having this shortage is that the generations now coming in to the workforce, they don't even look at manufacturing as a potential career path anymore. A lot of schools don't even carry any shop programs anymore, automotive programs. They kind of been going to the wayside for budgetary reasons or whatever. My son just, this year, they just reintroduced the shop class now. And he's really excited and he's having a good time. He's working with some wood, learning certain things on how to make joints with wood and things like that. They need to really bring that back. 30 years ago, that was common.
Kurt Bauer, are skilled trades in trouble in schools, especially for a younger generation? Parents want their kids to go to colleges and get degrees. What about the skilled trades?
Well, it's a great point. Your caller is exactly right. This is why we started Manufacturing Month in 2012, because we wanted to expose young people in particular to the career options in manufacturing, because there is a perception that is the term is dumb, dirty, and dangerous, and it's none of those things. When I tour a facility, it's the information age meets the industrial age, and it's very exciting to see something from a blueprint become an actual finished product. We have been working very closely with the technical colleges, which have been fantastic. I think we've got the best technical college system in the country. We work with the UW, and we do work very closely with the K-12s. Many of the K-12s are bringing back the old industrial arts or the shop classes, your caller referred to it. They now tend to call it the tech ed. And I do think that young people need to be exposed to those types of career options. Not everybody should go to college. Not everybody wants to go to college. And in Wisconsin, 70% of the jobs don't require a four-year degree. So we need to make sure that we are exposing young people to the jobs we actually have, not just in manufacturing either. You mentioned the skilled trades. We have a lot of vacancies in those areas as well, and you can do very well in the skilled trades with a certification from a technical college.
How are apprenticeship programs doing?
We have the oldest apprenticeship program in the United States, but it has been neglected. Governor Walker has worked to revitalize it. There's still more work to be done on it, but we are doing better. Again, it's all about exposure. A lot of young people don't even know that those career options exist. And so Manufacturing Month is all about trying to expose young people. We're trying to get plant tours. And it's just as important for the teachers and the parents to be exposed to these things, because you said it earlier, a lot of parents don't want their kids to go to a technical college. They want them to go to a four-year degree and be a white-collar worker. But they don't know what type of jobs these are and how intellectually and financially rewarding they can be. We've got to expose everybody, not just the children, because the people they listen to have misperceptions as well.
Ken in Fond du Lac says he's 63 years old. He's worked in manufacturing all his life. He says the problem is wages. They haven't kept pace with inflation, so workers adjusted are making less now than 30 years ago. What about wages?
They are going up, but he's largely right. They have, you know, wages in Wisconsin have been a little bit more stagnant. Now we've seen the data showing that we're going up a bit. The problem we have, there are two economic principles that are competing against each other here. One is the law of supply and demand, because I indicated that there aren't as many workers as there are jobs that either are available or will be coming available. But the countervailing aspect to that is global competition. And some of these manufacturers work on incredibly tight margins, so they've got to make sure that their production costs are competitive, otherwise they'll go out of business. So the two kind of work against each other, but we are seeing wages in manufacturing and frankly, other sectors of the economy going up as well.
Let's take Troy here in Muskego. Go ahead, Troy.
Yes, I just want to say that to your guest. I think that's a lie. I want to point out with wages that, first of all, this is a right to work state, so this is an anti-labor, anti-union state, and I would never encourage my kids to go into manufacturing. I would encourage my kids. I like to work with my hands, and a lot of my kids do too. But I would never encourage them to go get one of these jobs for $15 an hour with bad benefits. And I just want to point out the last thing is I'm getting sick of we're constantly talking about we're hearing about how these businesses can't get good help or they can't find workers, but yet they never offer a good wage, a livable wage, and they never offer the benefits that are required to make a living.
Kurt, it's a right-to-work state. How is that impacting manufacturing here as we wrap up?
Well, I think that that's one of the reasons why we were able to attract to Foxconn. The data is undeniable. Right-to-work states have more inward migration and do better economically than non-right-to-work states. One of the reasons why we pushed for it. Wages are going up in this state, and frankly, manufacturing jobs, almost all of them include benefits. You know, $15 an hour is a good wage in some parts of the state. It's a beginning wage. It can get you on a career path, but many of these jobs pay substantially more than that. I mean, there are career options in manufacturing for all levels. You know, you've got people who start maybe in the warehouse, and then you've got people in engineering. So there are all kinds of jobs that are available in manufacturing.
Well, Kurt, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was Kurt Bauer, President and CEO of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. He's led the organization since 2011, and we were talking about the state of manufacturing here in Wisconsin and the Coolest Thing Made in Wisconsin contest that wrapped up this week, with the winner being Oshkosh Corporation's Joint Light Tactical Vehicle. Now let's continue this conversation about the state of manufacturing with Anath Krishnamurthy. He's a professor in the College of Engineering at the UW-Madison, focusing on industrial and manufacturing systems engineering. Anath, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
Well, as you were listening to this conversation, talking about manufacturing, the give and the take, we've got wage issues, we've got filling these jobs. What do you see as the state of manufacturing here in Wisconsin?
I think manufacturing's changing at a pace that many people are finding it hard to keep up. I think the global competition is bringing up a lot of different opportunities for manufacturers in Wisconsin, but it's also raising a lot of challenges in terms of being competitive, both for business owners as well as for workforce. And so that's something that people are still trying to understand how best to keep pace with some of these changes.
Advanced manufacturing is high skills, high tech, needing perhaps an engineering background to do these jobs. Is there a disconnect you see in getting people with those skills into advanced manufacturing?
I think the caller and Kurt earlier also talked about some of the issues related to skills. Advanced manufacturing does require a different set of skill sets, whether you are an operator on the floor, or whether you are a planner, or whether you are a senior leadership trying to steer your business. I think the types of skill sets you need is skill sets that allow you to deal with different types of materials, different types of automation technologies, also the different types of customization requests that customers may be requiring of you. So these are skill sets that people need, whether that requires an engineering degree or whether that requires some form of technical education that comes out of our tech colleges. That's debatable, but it's definitely requiring a different set of skill sets.
When you look at the products that rose to the top in the Coolest Thing Made in Wisconsin contest, what stands out to you?
I think what stands out is the variety of the products that are there. I think even if you're not in manufacturing, I think if you looked at the variety of products that were even listed as candidates, it should amaze you in terms of the different types of things that can be made right here in Wisconsin, the potential applications, and also the different types of technologies that are used. I mean, you had a huge variety. Even the top two that Kurt was talking about shows the contrast in manufacturing. That speaks to the breadth of manufacturing. That also speaks to the broad application of manufacturing in general, whether it's Wisconsin or otherwise.
One of the callers mentioned Milwaukee being kind of the heartbeat of machine manufacturing, of big machine manufacturing in a different era. How have we seen manufacturing evolve in the Milwaukee area and around Wisconsin over the decades?
So it's interesting that, you know, right here in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, we have such a huge, heavy manufacturing base. That's something that we should all be proud of. But I think over time, we've also seen the manufacturing in the state and in the Wisconsin region in general evolve from also heavy manufacturing to high tech with the Foxconn initiative coming near the Milwaukee area. But also there's growth in other sectors like the Oshkosh, which is the defense area that you see, and also the biomedical aspects that's also growing in the state. So whether it is the Milwaukee region or other pockets of manufacturing in Wisconsin, you see a diversification of the areas of strength that Wisconsin has. And that also brings us huge opportunities in terms of workforce development, job opportunities in the state.
Yeah, because when you say the word manufacturing, it covers a lot of territory. It can mean so many different things. So what do you focus on in building your expertise and building your workforce base? Do you focus on one area of manufacturing, or do you try to diversify?
I think what the state is trying to do, and what all other states like Wisconsin are trying to do, is identify certain pockets of growth opportunities that they need to be focused as priorities. And I think Wisconsin is blessed with several strengths. You've seen strong growth in the ag sector, heavy machinery, medical, whether it is tech with, or whether it is companies like Hartley, Rockwell, GE. So I think what Wisconsin's doing is trying to pick a few of these priorities to focus on, because you can only put so many of your resources into some of these priorities.
When the caller talked about this being a right-to-work state and changing the dynamics of the workforce, access to perhaps lower wages and a number of things on the manufacturing floor, how does politics impact manufacturing?
Politics creates policy, and policy impacts the ability of manufacturers to be competitive. And I think Kurt and the caller raised a couple of important points. The reality is that manufacturing has got a lot more competitive. There is global competition, so margins are slim. The challenges for the workforce in terms of getting the skills, getting the on-the-job training is not easy. That's why many manufacturers are stuck between a rock and a hard place currently. On one end, from a customer side, they're squeezed. But on the other side, you may not have the resources to invest in your workforce, even if you had the desire to do so.
Manufacturers account for about 19% of Wisconsin's gross domestic product and employ more than 465,000 people. That's data coming from WEDIC. We're exploring how manufacturing is doing here in Wisconsin, what challenges it faces, and what happens to the workforce base in a new era of Foxconn. Ananth Krishnamurthy is with us. He's a professor in the College of Engineering at UW-Madison, focusing on industrial and manufacturing systems engineering. Engineering. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. What changes do you see in manufacturing? Have you watched processes switch over years, maybe even decades? Do you think there is a bias toward skilled trades? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back after this news update. Advanced manufacturing jobs requiring high levels of engineering skills. Do you find these skills lacking in our workforce? We're discussing the state of manufacturing in Wisconsin this hour. According to a 2016 White House report, the U.S. will need to fill 3.5 million advanced manufacturing jobs over the next decade. And yet, that same report predicts that some 2 million of those jobs will go unfilled because of the skills gap that we have here in the U.S. Ananth Krishnamurthy is with us. He's a professor in the College of Engineering at UW-Madison, focusing on industrial and manufacturing systems engineering. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Do you see a skills gap in your company? What do you think is the biggest threat to production here in Wisconsin? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Ananth, we're used to seeing products stamped with made in China. Is all the manufacturing that we're seeing here in the U.S., is that making any difference to what products we're bringing into the U.S. from China?
So I think what you're seeing with products being made in the U.S. versus China is something that has happened over the decades in the past, too. So the fact that some products are made outside the U.S. and some products are made in the U.S. is not anything recent. It's happened in the past. But I think the products that are starting to be made in the U.S. are products that are custom engineered uniquely to fit the requirements and the needs of a customer. And for customers that require those custom products at short lead times, manufacturing them in overseas is not going to make it, because regardless of how cost effective it might be, if you make it overseas, you're still going to have several weeks or months on a boat before it reaches. So the products that are being made in the U.S. are the products that are custom engineered to meet consumer or customer specifications or requirements here in the U.S. And that's a growing segment. As we know, as consumers of retail items or high-tech items, we want everything personalized. Mm. And that concept translates even into manufacturing. So whether you're talking about automobile parts, whether you're talking about machine components, all of these components are having a higher degree of customization. And that's what is the opportunity for manufacturers within the U.S. and Wisconsin.
But it comes at a higher price point, but faster turnaround.
Yes. So I think there's a little bit of misconception in terms of whether you need to pay a higher price for the customization or not. Not always. I think if you set up your manufacturing operations efficiently, you can actually provide the customization products at a comparable price and sometimes at lower cost. And we've had several success stories of companies right here in Wisconsin being able to do exactly that, you know, providing more custom products, whether it's injection molded components, sheet metal components, making custom products right here in the United States, in Wisconsin, cheaper than companies overseas, and delivering it faster to our local customers. So it's a and the reason I say it's a misconception is, if you think about it, labor costs, which is a big debate when it comes to manufacturing costs, labor cost is usually about only 20% of a product cost. If you take material to be another 30% of the product cost, that explains roughly less about half of the product cost. The remaining part, about 50% of the product cost, is driven by how you set up your manufacturing operations and supply chain.
Supply chain, okay.
And that's a huge opportunity for us. And what we've seen as part of our research is that if you can set up your manufacturing facility to make products at short lead times, you can influence the other 50% of the cost. And that's what Wisconsin manufacturers need to do. to set up their operations efficiently so that you go after the other 50% to compensate for any disadvantage we may have in terms of labor costs here in the U.S. versus in other countries.
Let's take a call now with Todd in Appleton. Hi, Todd.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, one of the things I see happening is that when you mentioned the skills gap, the gap is here, and it's widening, I believe. And one of the problems that I see as an owner of a sheet metal shop that we produce parts for cranes and other heavy equipment and so on and so forth, but we cannot find good welders, and in particular, we can't find good welders who can read blueprints. And the real gap is that they just do not have mathematical skills at all. And what happens is that we put them through a very simple test. We always take their phone away from them, of course, because of the calculators in them. But converting, just reading a ruler, converting fractions to decimals, converting decimals to fractions, and then being able to understand how many millimeters are in an inch. And we can't find people that can do that. They will literally get up when they see the math part of the test. They'll literally give up right there and say, I can't do this.
Todd, thank you so much for those observations. I want to get Ananth to weigh in here.
Yeah, so I think Todd's right. I think he's not the only manufacturer in the state that is facing a shortage of finding welders. I hear that from several manufacturing companies across the state. And there is a problem in terms of getting people in high school and middle school and others to learn and appreciate how manufacturing has changed so that they pursue those careers. There's also an educational gap. I think a previous caller talked about shop classes not being offered. You talked about apprentices programs that need to be strengthened. I think all across the board, if we have to address this shortage of workforce, we need to make further investments at all levels, trying to train our people, existing workforce and people that are coming out of the colleges, in some of the skill sets that are needed for the manufacturing industry for tomorrow.
Yeah, and just some of those simple skills like knowing your fractions and knowing your conversions and how to read a ruler. Those are skills that can serve you for life.
Yes, absolutely. And I think there is no denying that there is a perception problem with manufacturing. Part of the reason why we have a manufacturing month in October is to try and change that perception at all levels, parents trying to think about careers for their kids, as well as kids that are thinking about what type of careers and what can science and engineering and math backgrounds provide careers.
Let's go to Gary now in Jefferson. Hi, Gary.
Good morning. I really like your topic today. I'm a high school agriculture teacher, and on Monday, I and our tech ed department will be going to our school board to propose new class changes to fit almost exactly with the topics you're talking about, the jobs coming back, the shortages on skill sets. Trying to better align what we're doing with our students to give those skill sets that the tech programs are looking for.
Gary, do you think you have a good shot at getting those changes approved?
I would say absolutely. We have said internally that the iron couldn't be any hotter because of everything that we're hearing from businesses and from tech schools. And everything you're talking about today just feeds right into the things that we're preparing to present to the school board. And they're on board with it. They really see that in the career technical education area, the CTE as we call it, there really needs to be more emphasis because we've done a great job of doing the AP classes for the college bound, the 4-year college bound students. But now it's time to really start catching up with those career tech minded students.
Well, Gary, thanks so much for calling in. Ananth, do you see these changes in the pipeline?
I think it's exciting what Gary is trying to propose. I think I would encourage everybody in high schools or other related programs to take opportunities to take their students out to see manufacturing facilities. They should see how manufacturing has changed. We have so many facilities here in the state, and I'm sure a lot of our manufacturers would be happy to open their doors to get these students in to see the new face of manufacturing, the new products, the new technologies, and change the mindsets that oftentimes discourages people from pursuing these careers.
Well, Jen in Park Falls called. She says she hears about the manufacturing growth, but she wonders about the stability. Companies she hears shutting down or leaving the state. She says the Oscar Mayer plant is one prominent example of that.
And Jen's right. I mean, I think there are always companies that leave a particular state, and that always is, hits hard on the economy in the region and the locality. But there are also companies that open up new facilities. And so part of the challenge and the reality that people in this industry and also in other industries need to know is that as different companies come in or leave, you need to adapt your skill sets to match some of those changes that are inevitable in an economy.
We also learned, I think, from GM as well, General Motors, that employees have to be willing to, if they want to keep the job they're doing, they have to be willing to move, perhaps to another manufacturing plant, another part of the world. Is there that as well?
I think whether you end up having to move to another plant or another part of the world has other implications in terms of family and other things here. But I think one of the things many manufacturers are realizing is that if they have to retain their workforce and if workforce has to grow, they need to provide the infrastructure within the company to build the strengths and the skill sets that the workers need. So more often than not, I've had instances where companies are investing in the people skill sets and trying to find out new opportunities for the workforce that they have.
Ananth, as we wrap up here, all eyes on Foxconn. How do you see Wisconsin manufacturing change and advanced manufacturing change as we enter a Foxconn era?
I think the Foxconn puts a spotlight on Wisconsin, and that's good. It gives us the attention we deserve as a manufacturing powerhouse in the United States. I would believe that Foxconn is only a starting for better things to come to manufacturing. I think if, you know, in addition to the impact Foxconn itself might have, I'm hoping that brings other bigger companies like Foxconn, either in the tech industry or in other industries, to consider Wisconsin as a place to set up their manufacturing base, because we have a lot of strengths to offer, and I hope that's what the Foxconn story starts to motivate.
Foxconn, a gateway to other manufacturers.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Ananth, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Ananth Krishnamurthy is a professor in the College of Engineering at the UW-Madison, focusing on industrial and manufacturing systems engineering. Earlier in the hour, we heard from Kurt Bauer, president and CEO of Wisconsin Manufacturing and Commerce, about the Coolest Thing Made in Wisconsin contest. This hour of the morning show was produced by Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And this conversation about the state of manufacturing here in Wisconsin, you heard it on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.